In the first passage I read, Gary laments the lack of aesthetic choice, the monotony of boring beige stools. He chides the manufacturers for their lack of imagination and their incompetence in maximizing profit. Gary's demeanor towards the friendly Midwestern girl in the store is abrasive, and he leaves unabashedly as the villain. What is it about beige stools that so irritates Gary? It is that they are so blatantly designed for medical purposes. The future of those beige stools is circumscribed by their beige color and their obvious function. The beige stools have no freedom. They are irredeemably determined, destined, oppressed. So much so that the Midwestern girl can immediately guess Gary's intentions in purchasing the stool. Gary resents the fate of the stool. He resists relegating the stool to its purported function, which is to help his father take showers, and insists on the possibility of an alternative use, that of assisting suicide. I want to explore the Aristotelian idea of telos, the idea that the purpose of an acorn is to grow into an oak, that for an acorn to become an oak, to fulfill its telos, is good in a normative and meaning-giving way. A beige stool that is purchased and used to assist the elderly in taking showers conforms to expectations and thereby fulfills its telos. In this sense, the beige stool mirrors Gary's life. Brought up with boring, maybe even beige-colored Midwestern values, Gary's led a life that measures up against all conventional standards of success. He has a beautiful wife, beautiful kids, a large house, a stable job, and lots of money. He leads the life that his parents, at least superficially, would most approve of. He's always been the good son. Unfortunately, on the East Coast, Midwestern values lose their purchasing power. His Swarthmore-educated wife, and his freedom, autonomy, privacy-loving children in Philadelphia, they harbor values different from Gary's. They envision a good life of capricious consumption, self-determination. You see, the idea of telos and freedom are fundamentally opposed. So Gary finds himself displaced, teleologically confused, residing in a world of diverse goods, and ultimately depressed. He returns to St. Jude and has a disproportionately negative reaction to the severely circumscribed life of a beige stool. He wants to complete his transactions without any further hassle, without unnecessary invasion of privacy, without any friendly Midwestern chit-chat. In St. Jude, he completes all of his tasks in this minimal, angry, and guilt-ridden way. In the second passage I read, Franzen describes a set of curtains that Chip received as a gift from his father. On page 552, he writes of the curtains' telos. They were simply curtains, and they wanted no more than what any curtains wanted. The curtains, from their Midwestern origin, have a very clear function, but placed into an Eastern college dorm room context, they arouse only shame and ridicule, so they're stored in the basement to gather mold. Much in the way that Barry Schwartz formulates the paradox of choice, choice and freedom are not always liberating. Sometimes they can be crippling. In The Corrections, it appears that bringing one particular set of values into a cosmopolitan world, a world of diverse goods, only elicits shame. The section titled One Last Christmas ends with Chip proclaiming, "I can't, Dad, I can't." Chip's words deny Alfred the freedom to end his own life. It represents a circumscription, a rare narrowing of possibilities in the novel, a turning away from autonomy and a return to familial roles and teleology. Similarly, in the final section, we find Enid constantly correcting her husband, and Alfred throughout the novel is a figure of refusal. The act of correction implies the existence of right and wrong. Does this mean that correction implicates the validity of traditional teleology? I'm really interested in how we ought to understand corrections in light of my previous discussion, or as a financial metaphor. So for tomorrow, I want to discuss the collision between traditional values and consumer culture, the intimate relationship between excessive freedom on one hand and guilt on the other, which seems to me to be an experience that uniquely informs what it means to be an American. As a parting note, I hope to discuss tomorrow what is meant by the phrase tragedy rewritten as farce in light of David Foster Wallace's essay on irony. What does it mean for us that Friends' novel is a tragicomedy?